Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Fans in Motion podcast. The gang is all here. Our tour guides, Josh. Say hello, Josh.
Hello.
Brent.
Hello, hello, hello.
We're back for another adventure. And me, I'm the captain. My captain, my name is Andy. We're here to start another episode. This is our fourth episode. Might be in our top four of all time, if I had to guess.
Hey, I wanted to let you guys know, too, this is a big day for me, that I actually stopped smoking cigarettes. I'm on the like a 5-year plan now, where I go to cigars, and then after that I go to pipes, then I go to chewing tobacco, and then after that I'm on to nicotine gum.
You should do all of them at the same time. Brent, that line just about set me off the picture there. I don't know.
That's the only one I could come up off the cuff.
You may have noticed I got a slight weight problem. Yeah, I do. Yeah. Anyway,
you swallow a lot of aggression?
Along with a lot of pizzas. Pizzas.
Get in your
mouth. Oh, my God.
And get out of here.
Stripes.
Oh, my God. Wow, this did not start off the way I expected to, but it's fun, and this is why I love doing this. Wow. This is much fun. I'm looking forward to this episode. I won't give away the topic yet, Josh. I'll wait till we get to that point, but... have we got any feedback, any thoughts on the previous episodes we've released? At this point, we only have, two out?
Two out. Episode 0 and episode 1, so that would make this technically episode 3.
Yes, but it's our fourth, if you count 0 as 1. And then you...
Yeah, exactly.
You carry the 2.
It's an Amelia math.
The last episode was Dawn Patrol and the Origins, which was a long episode. There was a few things. I can't remember. I don't know if it was Robbie Swink that told me this or brought it up. If not, it was someone else, and I apologize. But between...
Actually, the last episode was when we pick our CDs.
No, he's right. You're not thinking fourth dimensionally.
Thinking forward. That comes out
last episode you guys have seen is the top 12 albums. We're recording this before it's released. So the episode that I'm referring to will be the Dawn Patrol album. So between Rubicon and between Jack Blades playing with Sly and the Family Stone and then joining Rubicon, he was in a band for about 6 or 7 months, which I remembered that part. I didn't really mention it just because those guys were probably in tons of small bands at that point. But the band was actually called Rampage.
Wow.
So he was in a band for about 6 months between Sly and the Family Stone and Rubicon, basically, to make money while... From what I understand, Jerry Martini was still trying to get the record deal, so he didn't really have a deal yet. So in between, he wanted Jack to be in the band, but he had to get that deal. So there is that. So Jack Blades had a band in the 70s called Rampage for about 6 or 7 months. And then I'd held up an album called it was a compilation album from Sacramento, 82, and it was a band called Avalanche that Jeff Watson... His name was on. I didn't have much information on it. Robbie Swink, who's on the page, actually messaged Jeff and asked him about it, and Jeff didn't really have much recollection of it. Robbie then messaged me about it and told me about that. So I just went ahead and messaged Jeff and sent him pictures of it and just said, hey, I know some people have messaged you about this. Here are some pictures of the album just so you can actually see what it is. And Jeff was like, man, it's a long time ago. I don't really remember. It doesn't mean that I didn't. And I basically told Jeff that I would make a video, put it on this, the turntable and make a video of it and let him listen to it. He basically said he wouldn't really know unless he heard it. So, we don't know. Like I said, Jeff was from Sacramento. That label is Sacramento. So that's what kind of led me to believe, hey, it's 82, Brad's with Night Ranger, so maybe Jeff jumped in and did a quick recording with that band. Who knows? We'll figure it out. But anyways, those are two things from that Dawn Patrol episode that some individuals had brought up.
Super cool. Hey, before we get too far into this, I noticed you guys are rocking some pretty darn cool Midnight Madness t-shirts.
Yeah, someone didn't get the fucking memo.
I am going to my Kiss reunion tour from Cleveland's Gund Arena.
Man, that's a big logo there. Isn't it? That's a big logo.
You like that?
Yeah, it's like three-dimensional. They're coming out at me.
It's because I'm fat. My moobs are showing. But here, I didn't have time.
This is our fourth member.
That's our motivational speaker. You guys, most people look at Richard Simmons. We look at Stay Puff Guy. But, yeah, I didn't have time to order me a shirt. My life's a little hectic right now, but I feel bad because I didn't get one. So, anyway, I just wanted to make sure we point out you guys look cooler than I do currently.
You probably say that on any episode.
I say it to all the people I podcast with. any news, anything happening in the world of the Neverland world of Night Ranger?
Yeah, I mean, we, now this is, remember, we're filming this. This is going to be almost a week and a half old by the time people get to see this. But Eric Levy and Joel Hoekstra just announced that they are releasing a project in early July. So it looks like it's a single, but I'm going to assume there's probably more to it. We had hinted about some things in an earlier episode that there was some stuff going on in the background. That was kind of what we were referring to. But yeah, so it's, and it's, who's all in that group? Was it Tony Franklin?
No, was it Tony Franklin?
Tony Harnell.
Yeah, Tony Harnell.
Yeah, he's on vocals.
Mike Starr.
TNT. Matt Starr. Drummer for Ace Frehley's band, the new Macaulay project that came out. James Lomenzo.
Yep,
from. Also Ace, former Ace Frehley. White Lion. David Lee Roth.
Megadeth. Amazing Race.
Amazing Race, that's right.
Megadeth.
Got stuck in Russia, lost the episode.
And there is Eric Levy of Night Ranger.
Yeah, there's that kind of the guy plays a little keyboard action there for Night Rangers. He's a little skittity scattity there.
So 2/3 of it is Night Ranger members.
And 2/3 Ace Frehley members.
Yep. So we got
mixes together, Kiss and Night Ranger.
Yeah, well.
So we got some some new music coming out, so that's good.
Yeah, that's gonna be great. I can't wait to hear that. It'll be fun.
Yeah, that's what I said. That's a super group. For sure.
It is. Essentially, yeah.
But other than that, there's nothing really going on with the band per se. It's really just that right there. So,
yeah. I think sadly, unfortunately, in this pandemic time that we're dealing with right now, nothing is going on. The tours are canceled. Everything's canceled. Nobody's doing anything. So news is going to be just, I think,
stagnant.
Not much going on, but we try. And I think Josh and Brent do a lot of work during the week trying to find stuff to talk about news-wise. So,
but we got
go ahead.
Well, I mean, the good thing is we got new music from Joel and Eric, and we'll promote the hell out of it on the page.
Yes, go ahead, Brent.
I was gonna say, speaking of finding stuff and on the page, little Bethany posted a picture of Jack and Brad. Looking like they were from Sha-Na-Na. I was calling them Sha-Na-Na-Na Night Ranger, whatever. That was really cool. I'd never seen that picture before. And when I got to digging and found out it was from the Bammies, I mean, I'm assuming that's correct. I don't see what else it could be if Huey Lewis also sang with them and the Neville Brothers. And, of course, Josh found the infamous Mario, or noticed Mario behind Jack and Brad. It was pretty cool. That was a good post.
Yeah, they almost looked a little bit like they were from the Lost Boys, if I was glancing at it.
Well, they had that little curly cue, that little greasy curly cue they tried to do. And
get Kiefer Sutherland there, and we'd have another, the two Coreys, and we got a movie.
Well, I knew that.
Never seen the movie.
I probably knew a little bit too much about the band when Brent had said it looks like, someone had said it looked like Midnight Madness or something, and Brent had said, no, it looks more like Big Life. And I was like, you know what, I don't look like quite Big Life, and I don't look like quite Seven Wishes. So I put on there, it's probably 86, maybe 87, and sure enough, So it's like I was able to, you know, just tell. And there's shit I probably need to know more than this, but I could tell that that is probably 86, not 85, not 87, 86.
Yeah.
I can tell two dudes what year, you know, I was just like, all right.
I was going by Jack's hair, the bottom of his hair.
He had the bleach spot, right?
So. Yeah, that's what I was going with more, and I was just trying to get a timeline on it in my head.
So, you know, but you were, like I said, 87, but then I was like, I don't think it's quite full-blown Big Life, so it might be 86. And
anyways, it's close enough.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's.
I was going to say, if this was any other group of people talking, I'd be like, you guys have a problem. Mm-hmm. But then when I realized who I'm talking to, I was like, that's kind of par for the course that you guys.
But at least it gives us some credibility a little bit, you know?
That's got to be 86.
Well, people posted on the page. No one knew about it. I had seen the picture before. I'd say that's why I knew Bruce Springsteen was on the back, the flip side of it. I knew it was from a magazine. We figured it out within an hour, probably.
So that's we've kind of jumped ahead into the Fans in Motion page stuff, which is cool. Finding these things, I love seeing so much stuff that people are throwing out there. It's so invigorating for Night Ranger fans. Like, you know, again, they were never such a huge band, and now those of us who are such fans of them, and seeing all this stuff and these pictures on it's. It's great, and I love the page, Josh, and I think you guys are doing a great job running it.
And I'm probably going to mess that. And Brent has talked about the Japanese fans. That's what's great too is I can tell some Japanese promos apart, especially when I have two of the same copy, and I can see, hey, this has this, this doesn't. That probably is a promo copy. But I had a Rubicon single. And it had the little square with some writing in it. Now, I know some early Night Ranger promos, only early ones, have the same square. And so I was able to put up there, you know, hey, is this a promo? And I guess in Japan they don't use the word promo, they use the word sample. So his name is, I am going to mispronounce this, Mio Hahare. Anyways, he was able to translate it for me and told me that it does indeed say sample on there. So that Rubicon Japanese 45 that I have actually turns out to be a promo 45. So yay me.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was pretty cool when he chimed in. That was really cool because I figured it was – I thought it just said not for sale like ours do, you know.
Yeah. Yep. So is there anything else on the page I might want to talk about before we move on to the to new stuff?
Well,
I got – go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say I really enjoyed Brandon Douglas. I believe Brandon Douglas had Night Ranger come to his facility and they put on a show. And there's a picture of him. He's standing in front of the stage like this and Brad is making a god-awful face behind him. It was hysterical.
Yeah,
and then everybody else started showing their front row pictures, and I just thought that was really, really cool.
That was a fun post. I enjoyed seeing that.
Yeah, I mean, right away when I saw Brad, and my daughter walks by, she goes, "That looks photoshopped." I said, "It ain't photoshopped. This is Brad just nailed it at the right moment." You know,
I noticed that a lot. I'm sure you guys have too. If you're at the shows, you watch if Brad.
Brent, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Andy froze up.
Andy froze up on us.
Yeah. Sorry, he'll come back. In fact, what I'll do is I'll send him a message while we're recording and talking and tell him if he hangs up, he can come back into the recording, can he?
Yep. I just stopped his, so now we are bigger on the screen.
Hey! Look how fat I am. You know.
So, hey. So
anyway, I'm going to.
Well, you go ahead and message him. I'll throw up some Night Ranger memorabilia here while we chit-chat. So, I was going to throw this up later, but some of you may have never seen this. This is the Japanese box set that came out in 2007.
I hate you for that, by the way. I want that so bad. It's back on Amazon right now for like $384.
I think I got it for $100 off someone selling it on either Amazon or eBay. But anyways, what's cool is it's basically like mini vinyl albums. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
And what's crazy is they are released on Geffen.
Yeah.
Which Geffen end up buying the rights, I think, to the Japanese catalog. And when you download this stuff off of iTunes, this is what you're getting. So I'll open up.
Here he comes.
I no idea what just happened. My internet went out completely.
It's all right. We were talking about you. No, he's showing the box from Japan.
I heard you missed me. I'm back. Whoa!
Better lock up your refrigerator.
Ah.
Anyway, Josh, are you still there? Continue with that box. I want to see that box real quick.
I was trying to get on my phone to join the conversation. That's how crazy it was here a minute ago.
Well, I sent you a message saying call back in because it would pick you up and bring you back into the recording.
Yeah. I don't know what happened. I lost connection, and anyway,
that happens again. I'm going to have a screen that says we're experiencing technical difficulties behind us.
Oh my gosh!
See you all now.
It's like Beck, man. I'm a loser, baby.
I'm just showing off the box set while we were. And if I get better at this, I'll edit that down. But that takes time, and I got a 3-year-old. So, all right.
Yeah.
So
we moved on to the topic of the day.
Hold on. I started showing the box set, so, you know, to kill time.
Yeah, you gotta finish.
So here is the Geffen Midnight Madness.
That's crazy.
And then inside it comes with a little miniature dust jacket.
Oh, that's awesome. Just cool. Like the album.
And then it's got the Japanese lyric book.
Yep.
So, anyways, yes, it's very cool. Glad that I tracked it down when I did. And I don't know where we were at, Brent or Andy, but let's just show off some new stuff and get on to the topic.
Yeah.
Nothing crazy.
I don't have anything.
But I got an old Gamma 45 single. Alan Fitzgerald was with Ronnie Montrose back in 1980. So this would be coming out basically right around time Jack and Fitz were roommates. And the other thing I got
is that a real or is it a bootleg?
This is real.
I guess it's a.
So Global Satellite Network Rockline. I came across this. It's Damn Yankees right around the release of the first album. Nothing special, nothing inside, just tells you the time and date, and it just gives you, they got a sticker telling you what's on there, nothing on the other side, so, anyways.
Are they selling those now?
No, this is something I found at a store, a record shop for a few bucks, you know.
Because, you know, those were live. I got to speak to Kiss on two different episodes on Rockline.
I was intoxicated.
I was a nervous wreck.
I was intoxicated one time. Came home, I think they said on Facebook or MySpace at the time, Night Rangers going live, send us some questions. And, like, I don't think people were calling in or something, so I was, I just got home from the bar. So I called in, and hell, I don't know what I asked them, but I was on the air live.
So cool.
So I think I asked them about stereo and asked them who was in it. And that's when they told me, you know, Jerry Martini and Jimmy Pugh.
Sweet, man. That's awesome. I don't have any stories like that. I don't. Brent has all of them. I don't have any.
So I sat there and I got to tell the story real quick. I asked Kiss, you know, I'm in a room filled with Kiss merchandise. I asked them what their favorite collectible was that they've ever released. And Paul and Gene said, I think it would be the t-shirt.
Wow, Gene.
Nothing cooler than seeing your logo on somebody's chest. That's
insightful.
That speaks volumes. And I'm thinking, over the pinball machine?
Yeah, it's a pinball machine, Gene. Come on.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, we'll know the same feeling when we go to a show next year and we see the Fans in Motion shirts out there.
Yeah. Sweet. Yeah, we need to get those done.
Well, yeah, I'm working on getting them online where people can purchase them. Some people have asked about them, and I've been kind of tight-lipped about it.
We're going to have warehouses full of them.
No, we won't have warehouses. We won't even have them. They'll order them from a company, and the company will send it to them.
We should have tour dates put on the back.
And
Lancaster.
Brent, make sure your mom gets that link so we can at least sell one.
Columbus, and I wanted to say, I'm sorry about the contest. I did a logo, and the first person who chimed in on my trivia question about episode one was going to get their name drawn on the logo. That ended in about 30 seconds. I didn't think it would go that quickly. I will do it again, but I will tell you right now, anything more than 6 letters in your last name is tough. It's very, very tough.
Tricky.
And I've seen some of them have 8 or 9 letters, and I'm going to tell you right now.
I got a few horse.
You ain't winning this.
You may have to, just do the Ranger look.
Jesus. It hurts.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, my God. This is the best part of the episode all night.
Right? Thanks for joining.
Oh my God!
Thanks for joining us, three fat old men.
Fuck. Jesus.
Issues. Love what happens in the middle of a sleeping pattern, you know, and you're sleeping. Well, and all
of a sudden, I mean, I'm sorry, but my Lord, I can't do anything about that. Oh my God. Anyway,
right,
we move on
people.
To the topic.
This is Mike number one.
The love of God.
Andy,
so everybody, look
off
for the Easter eggs. Brent hides something somewhere. Find it. He'll give you a special prize.
I'll say, hey, you found it.
You found it. So let's move on. This week's episode has been chipping away at my heart every day because this boy needs to rock. Josh, what are we talking about today?
We are going to cover the number one all-time Night Ranger album, Midnight Madness.
Josh, after we did that episode, well, you really had me reeling. I had to really think, and I was looking at the track listing again, just staring at it. I'm like, you know, that really is a perfect album. There's not a bad track. There's not a one I skip. So, yeah, Josh makes me reconsider my number one.
You probably need to reconsider all of them, but anyways,
well, you can't put Mojo in every spot.
So with this album, I think it's important to maybe go back to Dawn Patrol a little bit, and I think it was Robbie I was talking to from the page as well. We were talking about parts of Midnight Madness being recorded with Dawn Patrol. And
yes, that's always a story that I've heard, but well, you can maybe clarify.
And he had talked to Jeff Watson or sent him a message in the past, and Jeff said that was true. And I've always said that musicians in the band are sometimes their own worst historians. You know, they think something happened and it never did. There's enough to where there's some truth to that. We know Sister Christian was written before Dawn Patrol. We know that. Pat Glasser, who we didn't really pay much attention to, or if any at all, was the producer for the first three Night Ranger albums. He produced their demo that got them the record deal. So they have spoken in a lot of interviews how important Pat Glasser was to the early part of the band's history. Pat Glasser passed away a few years ago. I think it was Kelly Kagi really always talked about how he really believed in the band, produced their first demo. So he had told them that the first album, you know, that he thought, you know, this first album would become successful. And when it would become successful, they wouldn't have time to really write a second album. So he wanted them to leave some tracks back for the second album. That is where we have an issue of what songs were held back. Do you guys have any ideas of what songs maybe were written and demoed before Midnight Madness? That ended up on Midnight Madness?
If I had to go by sound, you know, the feel of the song, I mean, I would think Passion Play. That sounds like it could have fit right into Dawn Patrol without missing a beat. And
Rumors
I'm trying
to look
at the titles here.
Rumors in the Air sounds like it could be.
Yeah, I mean, I might even say Let 'Em Run.
That is, okay, so again, it's hard to get this information. But from what I've seen, it was Sister Christian, which was actually written back in the Stereo days. You Can Still Rock in America, When You Close Your Eyes, and Let Him Run. Now, I have always heard more of Sister Christian. Obviously, they talk about that all the time, not being on Dawn Patrol. But I had also heard Don't Let Him Run as well. This is just what I've found in interviews, random interviews of them talking. They've kind of mentioned You Can Still Rock in America and When You Close Your Eyes. I have a strong case that When You Can Still Rock in America was not written before Midnight Madness. And When You Close Your Eyes, that's kind of a story on itself too, because the history of who wrote that song has kind of changed over the years if you listen to different interviews. So that's one mystery that we got. Something I'll throw in there though. You guys know the song off of High Road, the song Hang On?
Mm-hmm.
That is actually a early Night Ranger song. That was something that's on the original demo that they they took the chorus from it. They had some cool verses, and they were, you know, I guess Jack and Kelly were like, well, why don't we just take the old, you know, verse from that song on the demo? So Hang On was something off of Dawn Patrol, you know, going back to the last episode. So that takes us up to kind of them getting ready to record the rest, you know, Midnight Madness. I'll let you guys chime in or, you know, go from there.
Yeah, I mean, we've always heard the story. Well, not, I shouldn't say heard the story. I just always felt like Rock in America was written in between albums. I don't know where I would have heard that, but that just seems like that's what I heard. I'm trying to remember back to, you know, MTV interviews and what we would have heard back in the day. But
well,
I always felt like that was like one of the last songs they recorded. And I don't have anything to prove that or back it up. It's just that's something I seem to recall.
Like they added it. Jack Blades. Well, interesting thing about Jack Blades is he is not one that writes on the road. He's said that before. Does not write songs on the road. So some musicians are out on the road. They will use that time to demo songs, record songs. Jack Blades said he basically never does that. You Can Still Rock in America is the one exception. The story changes, you know, depending on when you read an interview and what year it is. But the basics of it is that they were on tour with Sammy Hagar on the Three Lock Box tour. So Three Lock Box came out late 82. So that would mean that they're on tour probably 83 with Sammy Hagar somewhere. So this would be before the release of Midnight Madness. And there's some specifics. They one of them says that they were in Springfield, Illinois. And Brad bought a whole bunch of rock.
That was Springfield.
Huh? Yeah.
And, I was doing a Spinal Tap thing. Hello, Springden.
And just take a real quick jog. We don't have time for that. But Brad had bought a stack of rock magazines and brought them back to the Travelodge Motel, and him and Jack were reading them, and in all these, you know, new wave and all this stuff. Blondie was in the magazines, and you know, basically saying, is rock dead? And Jack was just like, well, we just played, you know, a huge crowd last night. You know, rock isn't dead. So Jack wrote that on the road. And I, at some point, takes some of it to Brad. Brad adds to it, and that's how you that song is written. So that story in itself, and just the particulars, because there are some interviews where he actually remembers the city, Springfield, Illinois. That would mean that that's not written before the
Dawn Patrol.
Before yeah. Dawn Patrol. And I guess why we're talking about the formation of these songs. So these would this would be, you know, sometime in the middle summer probably of 83 that they're recording this. And the reason why they're recording it is Boardwalk Goes Under. So MCA picks him up, basically says Bruce Bird, who is the vice president of Boardwalk, eventually becomes Night Ranger's manager. He basically gets... He forms Camel Records on MCA and gets MCA to sign Night Ranger and basically honor their contract and their plans with how they want to go about the band's future. So that's kind of where everything stops. We go back in and record a new album. And when you close your eyes, since we're talking about songwriting and stuff, that's changed over the time as well, where, you know, Jack tells a story about sitting at a piano playing the chorus, and I can't remember the guy's name, but this producer walks by that's really famous and produced David Bowie and Air Supply. He's like, what are you playing? He's like, oh, you know, whatever. And, you know, when you close your eyes, that's a really good, you know, chorus. You know, I think you got something there, and you think I do. So that's kind of the story that's told now, but there's a YouTube interview from early 84, and it's all five members. It's in Japan. I'd posted to the page early on, where Jack talks about writing When You Close Your Eyes. He had the verses, but he didn't have a chorus. And Jack says, Fitz took the track, went away for a couple hours, came back, and he had that When You Close Your Eyes chorus.
Who knows?
I always go with what's closest to the source of the creation. And I would go off that 83... or that early 84, you know, video or audio interview where they say, you know, Jack wrote the verses and basically Fitz wrote the chorus. And I think Brad's a co-write on that as well. So Brad threw something.
He is. That's what I'm looking at now is not to steal any of that, but I was trying to think of how much stuff do we know that Fitz writes? Would that make sense? Just looking at the history of writing in that band. But he is listed as a writer on it, so. But I always assumed it was a writer just because he maybe came up with part of the riff or something. Well, I never think lyrically.
I know Fitz, he doesn't get songwriting credits for a lot of the arrangements. So I could bring a song in, and then other people can, you know, add different chord progressions and arrangements and almost give the song a new life. And I know Fitz did a lot of that, but didn't get songwriting credits for it. So, you know, Fitz probably had his...
hands on everything.
But if you look at Seven Wishes, Midnight Madness, Seven Wishes, and even Man in Motion, he's got songwriting credits on some pretty good tracks. When You Close Your Eyes, he's got two or three on Seven Wishes. I Will Follow You, I know, is one. And he co-wrote Don't Start Thinking I'm Alone Tonight off Man in Motion.
Great song.
So...
great song.
Fitz is probably one of those guys who are just underappreciated in the band. I mean, he was basically the one that Night Ranger was his idea, you know, taking Jeff Watson and the three other guys and forming this new band. And then, so I just think Fitz probably had a lot more going on. So we just don't know, unless we ever talk to Fitz or Jack, who wrote the chorus of When You Close Your Eyes.
Let me jump off on a quick little jag here about songwriting credits. It's always bothered me as a guy. So for those who don't know, I'll make as sure as I can. You know, I'm a drummer. Brent's a drummer. I've played in a band and I've helped co-write songs and we've recorded songs. And to me, everybody who's involved in the writing of the song should get credit. For example, if you look at Sister Christian, right? Sister Christian is credited as written by Kelly Kagi. Do you think he wrote the piano part to that song?
Well, no. I will argue, though, that it's your job as the piano player to write those parts. So you could also look at it as, if I bring in the nucleus of the idea, that's my idea, and it's your job in the band as a lead guitarist to create that lick as a lead guitarist, or create that piano part.
To write that part.
But that's your job, is to write. If not, I mean, that's why you have some bands that have, I know Dio is one, but if you look on Man in Motion, and Man in Motion is the only one I know that does this, it has songwriting credits, but then in the liner notes, it says arrangements by, and it mentions every band member.
Okay. Right.
So, but I've always been, you know, to me, it's who, and a lot of bands are like that. Who brings the nucleus of it in gets the credit. And if you really do add a big part, then yeah, you get a songwriting credit. Like, you know, if let's say Jack wrote the verses and Fitz wrote the chorus, well, yeah, then that's two big parts. But I don't think just writing the piano part for Sister Christian should be co-write, because you're playing your instrument to a song that someone brought.
Yeah, but and I don't want to get into the debate about it, because it's just it's where I stand on it. But again, you wouldn't have, you know, if you just show up with a bunch of words and no music, and I go to my band, write, give me the music through all of this, I can't say I wrote that song, because of those guys, I can't do it. I can't write the music. I can't write the piano part or the keyboard or the guitar parts. We all are writing this song. I brought you lyrics.
Well, that's
as a drummer. I you know, and as far as the arrangement, that's great that you get arrangement credit, but arrangement credit doesn't pay you.
Well, here's the thing. If I bring in an acoustic guitar, if I bring in the demo for Sister Christian, and I have all the lyrics written, and I have the verses and the melody, and here's the demo, that's different. Because, I mean, that goes back to my argument, is I'm bringing in the song. Okay, here's the demo, here's the melody. If I just hand you a lyric sheet, and there's no melody or music, well, then, yeah, if you create the melody to go with those lyrics, then you deserve a songwriting credit. But if I bring in a song and it's an acoustic, you know, okay, here's how it goes, blah, blah, motoring, okay. Yeah, I expect you as the drummer now to figure out your drum part to the song I created. And just because you're creating that drum part doesn't mean you wrote the song. You're the damn drummer.
No, I didn't say wrote the song. We co-wrote the song.
You co-wrote anything. You played your instrument.
But then you could easily say, and I don't want to keep going, but you could say, all right, Kelly, you play the piano. You figure it out.
I would say, hey.
And Kelly couldn't do that. And I'm not trying to knock Kelly at all. Yeah. If anything, I'm just trying to say it's always been a bone of contention with me as a guy who's – drummers are always forgotten. And it's like, yeah, it may be true, but would Hot for Teacher be the same song if Alex Van Halen wasn't playing all that stuff? Now, Van Halen does give all four people. Everybody writes the songs. They've always been a diplomatic version of that, so – but I digress. I don't want to get into this debate, because I know it's a different thing.
So, you know, there's questions on who.
Yes.
There's questions on who, you know, who wrote what with that. Let Him Run, I would assume, probably is written a lot like Goodbye was, where Jeff puts down different ideas just acoustically. Jack grabs a cassette tape and listens to it. And that's how, we'll talk more about Seven Wishes, how he wrote Goodbye. But I would probably think that's probably how Let It Run started. Is Jeff wrote the acoustic part, put it down as a demo. Jack probably was going through the tape, listening, like that, started putting some verses over it, probably brought it to Kelly, probably Kelly, because I think Kelly's a co-writer as well. Kelly probably added something to it as well. So, and that, you know, probably is something that was written early on as well and left off that... Left off the first album. But like I said, we don't know what was recorded. We do know, though, it wasn't everything, because Jack Blades does talk about they are recording this album, and how they do it is they record all the music first, and they were getting towards the end, and the producer basically was like, Jack, we don't have lyrics to half of these songs. And you know, they were in LA, I think. You know, and there's all kinds of stuff going on. They're distracted. So they had him fly out like on a Thursday night to his parents' house in Scottsdale, Arizona, and spend the weekend basically there away from everybody to finish up writing the lyrics to most of those songs. So Yeah, he said he's, I think, I don't know what interview it was or whenever, but he sat by the swimming pool a whole weekend and wrote lyrics to Midnight Madness.
And you know, I mean, that is a great testament of how good of a writer Jack really is. Like, I don't know if, Josh, you've ever tried to write a song. I've written songs. Nothing. No one's ever heard. Maybe Brent. It is not the easiest thing in the world, but if you have a talent for it, and Jack seems to really have that, it's that's impressive to just knock out a bunch of songs.
I think what's more impressive is to actually knock out a great melody.
Yeah.
Because to me, I've always said, you know, lyrics are kind of the icing on the cake. You can have shitty lyrics, and as long as you have melody, that song's going to be good. But you're not going to listen to a shitty melody with good lyrics.
So, you know, a lot of the hair bands that Brent and I cut our teeth on, I mean, they're masters of shitty lyrics with great melodies. Yep,
that's what you need.
Great melodies. That's why I love it, man.
I mean, that's what's great about Bruce Springsteen is he's one of those guys that has good melodies, but you can get lost in the lyrics. That's why I like his music. But, you know, like I said, that's what's great about Jack Blades is he writes great pop rock melodies. Yeah. And very cool lyrics to go with it, and the same with Kelly Kagi.
Yeah, he tells some good stories too, which I enjoy a good storytelling. So let's go down. They had how many singles off of this album?
Well, let's Brent, you want to talk to us a little bit about when this was released and everything?
Yeah, just want to find out. Y'all appreciate my impersonation of Fitz for the past 10 minutes.
Sorry, I got up on a little bit of a. I tried to rein it in. I really tried to.
No, I don't know how Fitz felt.
Brent's known me for so long. He knows I can go and go about something I'm passionate about.
He's got a passion play going on.
I do.
Bada bang.
Okay, I just pulled up this file, and everything just crashed on me. That's great.
Well, I'll buy you some time. By the way, in my opening when I said about this boy needs to rock, I do know that was not on Midnight Madness. I just love that. I love that line. So
yeah, I love when, like, you know, if you listen to, like, you know, other shows, whatever, and they'll say, "Oh, this is from." I'm like, "God, no, it's not." No, it's
yeah.
Not.
I don't pretend to say that this boy needs to rock is on Midnight Madness. I just I was trying to find a way to throw that into the mix because I didn't want to wait for the Seven Wishes episode. I'll rehash that when we get to that point.
But I had to point out the episodes, you know, numbered episodes in a row here. Okay. Midnight Madness, according to, this is from the wiki page. I'm embarrassed that I had to go there. But it's saying the album came out in October of 83.
Okay. Yes.
And what is really, what I find odd about it is, and I don't want to jump ahead too much, Josh, but the first single, You Can Still Rock in America, they're saying that was released on December 3rd, 1983. I recall seeing that, gosh, at least in August before that album came out, because I had half the video recorded off MTV.
Well, Josh just happens to have something sitting right there.
I got a promo here.
Is there a date?
There is.
Thank you.
It looks like it's, you know, stamped, which a lot of these aren't, but some labels would get the, you know, some radio stations would get this and just with our little stamp when it came in. This looks like, okay, so I can't see everything on the date, but I can see a V for the month, so that would mean November. So
really?
Let me try to, okay, so it's under the promotional copy. Right there.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yep.
So, looks like November 21st, 1983.
Very odd, because why would you release an album in October and not release your single till a month after? You know?
Well, I mean, that could be...
That's crazy.
I mean, that's...
But, Brett, you know what? There's so much we don't know about the record industry. I mean, it's... We need to get it. You need to get a connection in the industry to talk to us about how that worked.
Well, it could be a lot of things. I mean, it could be we don't know what else was being released at that time. You know, it could be something just as simple as MCA's releasing a Tony Carey album, you know, or a single the same week, and they decide, you know what I mean, just something to, you know, so you don't know. And Tony Carey was on MCA with him at the time. But what I'm saying is, there it could be something as just simple as that, we don't know. But yeah, that does make a little sense, because usually the single would be released before.
Yeah. Trying to read something.
A couple weeks before, yeah. You know. What else would you like me to tell you about this album?
So, October 26, 83 is when you're saying it was released.
Yep. 38 minutes and 56 seconds long.
That's the crazy part. The whole album was only 38 minutes long.
Here's the thing, maybe that we can correlate something with that Don't Tell Me, or the Rockin' America single. They do a quick little tour, I think, in the States beginning November 23rd. They play Santa Cruz, California. So that's right around the time that single gets released. So maybe they release the single with the tour. They go to Japan in early December. They're there for about a week. And then they come back and they begin the Midnight Madness tour. I think it actually begins with them as a special guest to open for Quiet Riot and Girl School opening up before then. You guys, I'm disappointed, did you guys go see them December 30th, 1983 at Hera Arena with Quiet Riot?
No. Saw the River Band with Tony Carey.
Yeah, with Tony Carey.
So they play December 20th, 83.
I knew about the show, though. Mm-hmm. I wasn't driving then, though.
So they also play again. This could be wrong, but it looks like they play again in Hera Arena. And we talk about Hera Arena just because it's all close to us. We're all Ohio guys, and it was a famous venue in Dayton, Ohio. Every band played there. And February 25th, 1984, it looks like they played Hera again. So maybe they came back headlining themselves. But you guys saw them June 9th, 1984 at Riverbend.
Very first show ever at Riverbend.
Was it really?
Very first show. And Jack Blades announced it, and he said they were christening the building, and they played Sister Christian. I'll never forget that.
I don't recall that. I recall who I went to the concert with.
It was the first rock concert at Riverbend. I should say that there was a Cincinnati pop show before that, but it was the first rock show at Riverbend.
That's my mind is reeling, and I didn't know that.
Riverbend is an outdoor amphitheater. For all of you that don't know, I'm sure most cities have one. Just holds probably 15 to 20,000 outdoor shed. So this tour really puts Night Ranger on the map. They're going up at this point. They always, and I don't know the exact date, but they mention it a lot when they knew, kind of like, holy shit, let's hold on to our corncob pipes, this is going to take off, is when they pulled up to La Crosse, Wisconsin, and they saw on the marquee sold out. And oh, nice. they all mentioned that venue, or that La Crosse, Wisconsin. So that was an important, I just don't know when it was. I don't know.
Well, it has to be after the release of
Lost him.
Yep.
Back then?
Unfortunately. Unfortunately, he's back.
It might have been Night Ranger and the puppet show.
Yeah.
Well, I've always said puppet show, then Night Ranger.
They never listened.
And I don't know, did they? I think that was the one show where they played Jazz Odyssey.
Okay, I'm going to bring this back. When this album came out.
Yeah.
I could do this all night.
It was dead.
Yep.
It was dead until Sister Christian was released.
When was that released?
That was released.
I can tell you quickly.
March 10th, 1984. So months later, after Rock in America, once Sister Christian popped up, God, I remember. I mean, I had the album. I remember Andy and I going to Daytona Beach with our parents on spring break, and that's all we heard on the way down there.
Yeah, it was everywhere. Spring of 84, man. I mean, great for me and Brent, because we're Night Ranger fans.
Yeah, so therefore, hearing it as much as I did, I'm like, okay, there's life in the band again. That's great, because I didn't want it to be a sophomore jinx for the band.
A lot of people don't know that You Can Still Rock in America was basically a dud.
Yeah.
Really was.
And there was a video for that. Then they released the video for Sister Christian, and you said it was March of 83. And this is the, you know, that's the song that puts them on the map. That's the song that really propels them to be in the public's eye for the next really three strong years. It starts with...
I had that crossover appeal, you know, to pop radio, top 40 radio, and rock radio.
Because this starts, I think the next four singles are all, they're all top 40. And I think the three out of the four are top 20. So this starts, you know, the peak of Night Ranger.
Well, and to touch on that, Josh, Rock in America only got to, what, 51?
Brent,
am I right on that?
Yeah, 51.
And then Sister Christian went to
number five.
So yeah, you know, Sister Christian really takes them off. And at the same time, they're on some great tours as well. I mean, we mentioned Quiet Riot. But once this takes off, I mean, they tour with ZZ Top. For this tour, opening for ZZ Top, and you got to remember, ZZ Top is on top of the world.
Yeah, they're huge.
You know, and unless you talk to people like me that, you know, just get into, you know, the 70s ZZ Top, but I do like my little bit of my 80s ZZ Top. But what, Eliminator? That would have been an Eliminator tour, right?
Yeah.
So that is a huge tour to be thrown onto. And they do, you know, other dates throughout the summer. They play, and some people have posted the advertisement for it. Andy, I think you were one for the Metal Fest in Kalamazoo.
Yeah.
Where they keep the wild Kalamas. And that was May 27th, 1984, where that was, and was like, what, Motley Crue?
That was a crazy lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but so they're.
I'll pull it up while you guys talk.
They're on these huge tours. If anybody from Ohio, you know, was you know, a teenager or in their 20s around that time, they probably went to a show at Legend Valley in Thornville, Ohio, and they played there in July of '84. And I think they played with 38 Special. They did a lot of dates with 38 Special at that time as well. And, of course, 38 Special was huge at that time. So that not only do you have this single that's rocketing up the charts, and you have this, you know, relatively new channel called MTV, but you have these great tours that they're being put on. So it's just a perfect storm for the band to really take off.
Yeah, real quick, Josh, I got that Kalamazoo show. I mean, that thing was Triumph, Rat, Motley Crue, Ozzy, Accept, Quiet Riot, and Night Ranger.
Yep.
I mean, and it was 1950 for that show.
So,
25 day of.
Though 1950 was probably a good little chunk of change back then. It's probably close to probably 40-some bucks in today's dollar, but even that, I would, you know, $40 isn't bad. But so, yeah, so, you know, they're on great tours. They tour most of 84. And then probably towards the end of 84, they're taking off tour. They, they tour to the end of the year because they start playing, I think, New Year's Eve in San Francisco there for every year for a while. So they tour about to the end of 84. And then they go in to record Seven Wishes. So,
They did Dick Clark's Rockin' Eve that year, wasn't it?
And that's the stuff
I think I have that on video somewhere.
That was probably recorded in November or something like that.
Yeah. I think they did When You Close Your Eyes, I think. Which would be the next. So,
and speaking of When You Close Your Eyes,
Segway.
Summer, July 7th, 1984. Huge hit was an MTV exclusive video. Never forget that. I had the yellow cup the monkey was holding. They used to have that cup. It came in. Remember you used to say, I can't believe you got the monkey's cup? It came in Purina dog chow. That's what it came inside of. Back of that. It was a Rubbermaid cup. Just giving you some, you know, factual information.
I think I have one of them now. Like not at the same time.
Kelly Kagi's shirt was probably from Chess King.
Oh, my God.
You know? But no. When you close your eyes was huge. Not as big as Sister Christian. It only made it to number 14 on the charts. Still top 20 hit. In my opinion, a little bit rockier, better. Love that song.
To me, When You Close Your Eyes is the quintessential Night Ranger song.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I mean, it defines Night Ranger. It's basically, it's melodic. It's got some rock. It's got, you know, the melodic part to it. And, you know,
it's got a great story.
Yep.
Well, I think it really, if you want to explain what Night Ranger, like you said before, Josh, if you're going to give someone a sample of what Night Ranger is, that is the perfect song to do it, because you hear Jack, you hear Kelly, blazing guitars, great melody, a great story, super cool video. I mean, what's not to like?
Night Ranger, man. Night Ranger.
And on top of that, a great album, which is a great album. From beginning to end.
So,
it's got something for everybody.
And here's the thing too, is people that are younger than us don't remember. Now, I was 7 during 84. This would have been about the time that I got the album, or got introduced to him, because I remember watching Sister Christian that summer, and I remember being in my bedroom watching When You Close Your Eyes. I never saw You Can Still Rock in America. All right. So we didn't have YouTube back then. So how are you going to watch these videos? I never saw the video You Could Still Rock in America until about 1997, when I lived in Columbus, Ohio, and I got MTV2. And one day they played You Can Still Rock in America. And I was like, holy shit, I finally get to see it. And, I got into bootlegs about that time, and I had found someone had a bootleg with all the Night Ranger videos. So finally, at one time, I was able to see, you know, because, you know, it had been, what, 10 years at that point, a little bit longer, 13 years since I saw, like, Sister Christian, When You Close Your Eyes. I'd never seen Color Your Smile. I'd never seen I Did It for Love. And there was no way to get those videos.
Parts Away.
I'd seen that. I saw it premiere when I was 10. I was at my grandma's house, and I sat there for. Remember how they used to do the upcoming videos? They would show the rocket launching, and then they'd show clips of the upcoming.
Yeah, and I would try to guess all three of them.
And I saw Hearts Away, and I sat there for an hour waiting for them to play that. But anyways, that's how you had to see your videos, is if MTV or something didn't play them. But nowadays, you can just click on YouTube, and no one realizes how horrible it was back then. And another thing during this time, too, and I don't know any information about it. I'm not going to, you know, don't send Jeff messages about it either, because it's so long in the past. Nothing ever happened with it. But Jeff and Neil Sean were looking at doing a solo project together from Journey.
At that time?
Yep. So it had been early 84. Neil Sean had gotten a hold of Jeff, and Jeff was spending time in his house, and they were working on material. Nothing ever came out from it, but that's out there a little bit as well.
Interesting. So, I'm trying to find the chart. I wanted to see what was Night Ranger, but I can't seem to pull the chart up right.
So all you got to do is just type in Billboard 20, and then just type in whatever, March of 83, 84, whatever you're looking for. That usually will get you a good little spot. But, yeah, so that really, you know, this puts them on the map. And what the reason why we're seeing Night Ranger in playing the places that they're playing, opening for the people that they are, is yes, Sister Christian, Midnight Madness, but for the fact that they followed it up with Seven Wishes and had 3 top 40, 2 top 20 hits on their next album. So Midnight Madness and Seven Wishes, those two albums taken off, is why we're doing this podcast, and there's people, you know, because they this just propels them.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. And the great thing is, I don't know, I'm sure they didn't realize it at the time, but Sister Christian has just become a colossal hit. It's still relevant today. People still listen to it. I mean, it was part of...
It's Americana.
What was it part of? Was it Rock of Ages? Is that what it was? The play?
It was also part of that porn movie.
Boogie Nights.
Yeah. I mean, it's just
not my favorite porn movie, by the way.
Never seen it. Surprising.
Shocking.
But
I never see a lot of movies.
Listen, 100 years from now, when no one really knows the name Night Ranger, just like Perry Como. Perry Como sold millions, tens of millions of albums. No one cares about Perry. It wasn't lasting like Sinatra or anything like that. 100 years from now, when no one knows the name Night Ranger or whatever, if they want one song that's played, it's going to be Sister Christian.
Absolutely.
So that's going to be their lasting mark on the world.
Yeah, but by that time it'll be covered, and it'll have yo bitches and hoes, Sister Christian, you knows.
It'll be done by Harry Styles. Come on, Brent, you know that.
Anyway, Minute Madness peaked at number 15 on the Billboard charts. 15.
And not bad, because, I mean, if you guys, I mean, think about who's on the charts at that time. You got probably Thriller and Born in the USA, just two things off the top of my head. Prince is probably out there. So
okay, well, I can quickly give you, I mean, I can't give you the exact order, but what Night Ranger was competing with in that summer, you've got Prince, his Purple Rain soundtrack is out at that time. Tina Turner, who has What's Love Got to Do with It, McCartney and Michael Jackson have Say, 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 the Footloose soundtrack is out at that same time. Against All Odds is out. Van Halen's 1984 is out at that time. Lionel Richie with Hello. Hello. Yes, Owner of a Lonely Heart. Ghostbusters is out at the same time. The classic Culture Club, Karma Chameleon, is out at that same time. So, yeah, and Springsteen is out with Born in the USA. So, I mean, they were really... Duran Duran was still hot then. I mean, you're talking The Reflex was out then.
Yeah, Madonna.
Cindy Lauper had just hit. She had, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, Time After Time. The Romantics. How do you compete with The Romantics?
Weird Al was smoking back then.
So, I mean, I think it's a pretty damn valiant effort considering what you were up against.
And Kiss had to Look It Up out soon to have Animal Eyes.
Gotta throw that in.
Okay.
Always.
Yeah, so, always.
Have you guys ever noticed? Number one, this is the best one, by the way. I mean, if I had to make like a top 10 album covers with people in scrubs on them, number one. But there's actually a lot of people don't know that. Yes, here's the album cover. There's actually six members of this band, okay, and they're all on the album cover. I mean, everybody knows Jack, Brad, Fitz, and Jeff, but a lot of people forget Buzzy. Okay, Buzzy was an integral part. They kind of always pushed him to the side. So he always kind of tried to... So if you look here, there's Brad. But if you look over Brad's shoulder, you can see Buzzy.
Yeah.
All right? The sixth member of Night Ranger. Promo copy, by the way.
But did he get any writing credits? That's what I want to know.
No, because
he was always buzzing off. That's why
he was the fucking drummer.
How dare you, sir?
So
how dare you?
Live pull.
Everybody on the back here, I can't. One of the times I met Jack Blades,
directly in the center. Right in the center.
Well, I'm not. I just wanted to let him see.
I'm saying because when it splits into three windows, when you show them the one time, everything was off.
I'm just letting them know what I'm actually looking at. I'm not focusing on anything.
Gotcha.
We're talking about the back cover, Midnight Madness. So maybe it was Brad or Jack. I don't know. It was one of those times I met him. He went through and pointed to everybody and told me who they were. And one of them's our tour manager. That's all I can remember now. But yeah, so all those guys played some, you know, I think some part in the band. Like that was our tour manager, that was our tech, or something.
Yeah.
So that would be something cool to figure out. They do think. Well, maybe it's on the actual dust jacket here. So, promo copy. Gold stamp.
Yep.
So we'll talk about... I always thought these were some great photos. As a kid, I would stare at those at 7 years old. And just... You know, you're 7 years old.
I love the one of... Is it Jack that's up in the far... The top corner? Rocking? I mean... Yeah. How cool is that picture, man? I wanted to be Jack Blades. I still kind of want to be Jack Blades.
I wonder if those are from Day on the Green. Didn't they play Day on the Green?
They did. I don't know exactly when that was.
I like to think that was Riverbend, Brent.
But
wouldn't have been on for that.
It's UD Arena. Kiss Tour.
Yeah, it could have been the Kiss.
I wonder who this guy is here. Let me find it. There's Jack right there. All right, and then you see the guy working on the keyboards underneath.
Looks like my dad.
But yeah, that guy's on an album. When I was 7 years old, my favorite member was Jeff Watson because my initials are JW. And Jeff Watson's was JW.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was how I got taken in with that.
You were probably just learning your eight-finger technique at that point at seven.
Yeah.
You want me to really blow your minds?
No, not really.
Okay. You're going to be singing Didn't I Blow You Away after this. Weaver, Parker, Walter. We all got the same amount of letters in our last name. They all end with ER. Thank you. Notice that tonight.
Yeah. Buy your underwear.
I was doing something for the show. Making some graphics, and I saw the name.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I don't know. Definitely. Yeah.
Well,
I don't know, Vern. People are going to be here all day.
Andy, you're killing me.
Going to hell.
They think Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons.
I just was looking at that right there.
Of course.
You want to talk about Glenn Hughes a little bit, Brent?
Glenn Hughes just sang backing vocals on Rockin' America. And he was also thanked in the liner notes here. Glenn Hughes has sang for like everybody.
They also thank Mel's Place. Is that from Alice, the TV show, or is that the?
I think they were big fans of Vic Toback.
Who isn't? Raise your hand.
So,
did you ever notice Vera looked like the guitar player from Faster Pussycat?
Dang, man,
looks just like Brent Muscat. Look him up, Vera from Alice. And Brent Muscat, I'm telling you what.
Luckily, at this point, no one's still listening, right, Josh? We can assume, based on the analytics, no one's paying attention.
He told me that before, and he said what was even weirder is he always wanted to do Vera, and then it got
weird making this part
because,
up.
You know, that dude looked like Vera, and he like thought, well, maybe I want to do him, and it really confused
him. It's conflicting. You know, Brent, you should do... Your content should be.
All right, hey, Glenn Hughes, by the way. Glenn Hughes played for Trapeze in the 70s, was in, Mach 4 of Deep Purple with David Coverdale, Whitesnake, sang for Black Sabbath there for a while. This guy really has some pipes.
Dead Daisies now.
So Glenn Hughes has sang on a lot of stuff, and he has these soaring vocals. So... the vocal part, he does that soaring vocal in the chorus, which I guess Brad actually did on the demo. But yeah, Glenn Hughes, just great musician. Just wanted to give a little background of who we're talking about here. Sang on the
You gotta wonder how did that come about? Like, were they in the studio and Glenn was in there at the same time? Like, hey, Glenn, come in real quick and help us.
Mm-hmm.
Or those guys.
You know,
those guys know everybody, number one, but yeah. I don't know what Glenn Hughes was doing at that time, and it might just been studio work, you know, for his vocals, because he did sing on a lot of stuff. So it could have been, sure. You know, hey, we'll get him in here and pay a couple grand. But They also thank Bruce Bird, who got him the deal, vice president of Boardwalk Records, Sammy Hagar, Bruce Cohn, their manager. So there's some of the credits. This album, just for all the collectors out there, you have that rainbow label. That is the only label in the U.S. that was ever released on. They never reprinted that with that Camel label, like Dawn Patrol was repressed. Seven Wishes has both labels because they eventually switch labels and begin pressing it on the Camel label. And then Big Life and Man in Motion are all Camel, just the Camel label. So if anybody has a U.S. pressing of this with the Camel logo, post it because I've never seen one before.
Josh will buy it from you.
Maybe. Never know.
Yeah.
So
price is right.
We'll do an episode. Maybe do it. You know, Andy, if you're busy, we could do this with some. You know, we could fill an episode in, like a collector's episode, with me and Brent. So this is where, if you're going to collect vinyl,
Brent and I.
And I've had, you know, a few people, you know, message about wanting to find the Bruce Cohn, no management symbol on the Dawn Patrol and what to look for and stuff. So if you're really going to get into vinyl on Midnight Madness, MCA has two factories that print records. So there's two different versions of these records. And mostly the easy, you can go to the Dead Wax. One factory has a little etching on the Dead Wax, and another one has a different one. But the labels are different. So if you see this little Camel Records is Bruce Bird's little division off of MCA. So if you look on the label and you see that Camel logo right there.
Yeah.
Okay. Sometimes it's on the left-hand side, sometimes it's on the right-hand side, and that depicts what factory it was printed.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
There's the hype sticker.
Nice. The red one, yeah.
You Can Still Rock in America, Rumors in the Air, and Touch of Madness are the songs presented.
Well, that's when it first came out. Yep. You know, they didn't probably plan their singles, you know.
And you have two different types of hype stickers. This may be a different one, like an older one, I don't know. But this is a white hype sticker. And it's got Sister Christian, Rumors in the Air, and You Can Still Rock in America. Rumors in the Air is released as the fourth single off this album. No video, nothing commercially in the United States will get there. But and there, like I said, there's different. You get, we'll get into it more. But if you look at that, it says what? Midnight Madness and then Night Ranger underneath. There's some labels where they're switched. Night Ranger's on top, Midnight Madness is underneath it. You really get into it to where there's, like, Alan Zintz did the mastering of the album. There's some of the albums have Alan Zintz mastering in the Dead Wax. Some of them don't. Columbia House, the CRCs, the RCAs, those are all there. There's some variations. I always like these. So here is Midnight Madness.
It's going to be epic. Oh.
With the epic from,
I knew it.
This is actually, though, not England. Where is it from?
Netherlands.
Germany.
Canada.
Canada.
Take off hosers, Bob and Doug's.
No way, eh? Midnight Madness, yo.
This is kind of neat.
Motoring.
That's what happens. I drink too many beers. I get Midnight Madness.
So, Germany. Bellophone Records.
That's blood, eh?
Go ahead.
Germany. Bellophone. Germany is all Bellophone. And this is a promo, I guess, copy. I don't have anything promo on it, except that it came with a postcard.
There's no little girl on that postcard, is there?
So it comes with a postcard and then a press release in German.
Oh, boy.
So just something neat. So more Germany. This is kind of different. Mexico has a series.
Good catch.
Called Siri Rocker. So it's the album cover just with that little banner across it. You know, rainbow logo, but it's all in Spanish and stuff. Then you start really realizing how big they're getting, because they're printing these in all parts of the world. Venezuela. Different cover. It comes in plastic. The material's a lot, you know, lighter and thinner. So yeah, they're getting printed all over the world. And then obviously we all love the Japanese versions. CBS Records, Sony's still releasing them in Japan. Comes with an additional booklet in Japan. So you get this.
Is it the lyrics inside?
There's the back. Oh. It's got Dawn Patrol. So you open it up, and it's got like a biography on them.
Yeah.
You can't read anything other than Night Ranger and the band members.
You know, I just remember.
It's more like a tour book.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
I've never seen that.
Here, bro.
I've got it.
For the ladies that like Brad, there you go.
There you go.
Or Brent.
Married with two kids to a female.
You can still like Brad, buddy. We ain't judging. Man. Look at this shirt Jeff's wearing.
Yeah, it's like Brent's logo.
And then you got Kelly, and there's the men.
It's
I have my poster book from Midnight Madness tour. I might have thought I'd brought it up, but I'll save it for when we do the deep dive on the album. I'll bring it.
Yep.
So it's got the.
Yeah, it looks like a painting, kind of, the way they did it.
Yeah. I didn't know this, but I got this autographed by Jeff, Jack, Kelly, and Brad. Somehow I missed Fitz on it, so I had to hunt him down.
Heard you making fun of me and said, screw you, pal.
Yeah. There's
two paintings. Here's the back. It's got the same type of painting, just a different scene. So I just wondered where those original artwork.
I don't think they're actually paintings. I think they just kind of
did
something, yeah, over top of the picture and made it look like a painting.
They're paintings, Brent. They're in a museum somewhere. Quickly.
They're in the Louvre.
So what's great about this album is Night Ranger's taken off. They're printing singles all around the world. Promo copies, different variations, a star on the left, a star on the right. This is cool. This is a promo copy of You Can Still Rock in America. And it's got a picture sleeve for the promo.
All right.
So, for recurrent airplay only. So it's got the picture sleeve, and it has a small programmer's thing in the back. So, very cool that MCA is really, you know, promoting this album. A lot of times you get a promo, and it's just this.
Yeah.
So, it's released commercially in the States, just on the rainbow label there. You can get a camel logo in the top left or the bottom left. Japan. And they released Rumors in the Air as a single in Japan, commercially.
Oh, cool.
What's the B-side to that one?
Touch of Madness?
Should have been a single, too.
Sister Christian. Now, this is, if you collect 45s, they release this in every country. So there's a ton of them released in the United States. Brent. Canada. What's cool is England.
I paid attention.
That's cool.
And it's got the small little spindle, unlike most 45s. I just love the real simple artwork. You have Sister Christian released in Germany, which is the cover with just Sister Christian across the top. You have it released in Italy. Again, the cover beat up on the back a little bit, but
that's pretty cool with chipping away.
Yep. Portugal releases Sister Christian. You can see
Estados
United States. Top 10 United States.
And it's the only one that I see that they use the old
70s MCA. Yep.
But you have it released in Germany. You have it released in Japan. When you close your eyes, again, release the United States with and without a picture sleeve.
Love the picture sleeve. Why didn't they put a lot of effort into those elsewhere? That's true.
They did in Japan. And then I think it was Emily that I was talking to about Fitz. I think I said it on the Dawn Patrol episode where Fitz looked like he's going to kick someone's ass.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
So it's on the Japanese When You Close Your Eyes 45. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so
okay.
So let me find Fitz.
Yeah, he looks a little...
right there. Man, yeah, look at that. Yeah. He's none too happy, man. He's ready to go at you. So...
Yeah.
Mean mugging. So... If you get into 45s, and we'll do an episode where we dig into it and show you all the different variations, but like this stat...
You mean we didn't?
I skipped over a lot. So there is your 45s for the singles.
Wow.
And what's cool is, this is how the... You know, what's great is, you know, we talk about how great these singles did and what... You know, this is what people buying this, these 45s is what helped, propel the album. Was the purchase of those. So, but I think I showed this to you guys one time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Bought this off, I think, eBay years ago. Someone just threw it up there and sold it for, I don't know, $4. And I didn't buy it right off the top. You know, I just let it sit. It was probably relisted. And they had a little button with it from Dawn Patrol. So it's a little wristband that says Kelly Kagi on it. And no one's going to take the time to forge this. And
You wouldn't think.
And sell it for $4. And it's got some age to it. So I always wondered if Kelly, if you're watching, you know, did your mom make
when
that?
When you meet him.
I don't know. I think I keep forgetting I had it. So I never took it. So, you know, maybe I just need to wear it, you know, one time.
When you next time you do a meet and greet, that would be so cool to show to him, because I bet he would have a story behind it.
Yeah, or he may not remember. Cassette tape from Saudi Arabia. This is how big they're getting. Sheep music.
Sheep music.
For Sister Christian.
Ace of Gunna Willis music and see all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
Japanese tour book. So these, I mean, it's pretty neat. It's got, you know, some great photos in it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll eventually probably post this on the page. But
it's better than the American poster, you know.
But it's
That's awesome.
It's thick. I mean, it's 20 some pages. It's not very thin or anything like that.
Back when tour books cost $8, you know.
Yeah.
Here, the Japanese. Now I need four. To post this so the Japanese fans can tell me about it. I got some Midnight Madness Japanese ticket stubs. So there's that one, and it looks like a tire ad for Dawn Patrol and Midnight Madness. So I'll eventually post those on the page in the Japanese.
Motoring. It was there motoring.
Nice. Nice. Well played.
Tell me a little bit about it. Did you guys have this?
No, I didn't buy that.
I didn't get it.
I just remember being 7, 8 years old and my aunt had it, and I wanted one so bad, and I think my grandma got it for me for Christmas. So
I don't remember that. I remember the t-shirts, the poster bag or whatever, and the necklace. That's all I remember them selling when I saw them.
Sold at the shows.
I don't remember that.
I think it was sold like in record shops or, you know, stuff like that, because my grandma wouldn't have, you know, she took me to a concert.
Sure.
Five. Night Ranger starts appearing on album covers.
I remember that.
Yep. So this is Guitar Player, December of 84. And one of those It may have came with this. You can still rock in America. Yeah. It's like a little plastic vinyl. Guitar player, it did, December of 84. So
you had to put a penny on it, didn't you, to hold it in place?
Those were so bad. I have a stack of Keel ones.
Am I right?
Place coin here.
I have.
Yeah.
And I have a bunch of Guns N' Roses ones of those promo ones. I should sell those. And Burger Chef, you got those in the Burger Chef fun meals too.
That's what I remember.
Yeah. They're blue.
Night Ranger contract writer for June 10th, 1984. This I posted on the page like the very first week that we started it.
Wasn't that right after we saw him? We saw him, what, June 9th?
I don't have it in front of me.
What was it? You guys saw him June 9th, 84, yes.
So that's June 10th.
So this is June 10th, Irvine Meadows Terrace.
That doesn't make sense. They wouldn't have gone from Cincinnati to Irvine Meadows.
Well, let me make sure. On June 10th, this may be when it was signed.
I'm not trying to make it look odd. I mean, that, but tour-wise, that doesn't make any sense. So.
No, not at all.
Or they have the worst road manager in the history of road managers.
Now, with all this COVID stuff, that stuff could start happening when they're making updates, you know.
They could have changed the date. I had to look at it, but it looks like either maybe this is being signed in April.
I mean, look, they could have done it. That just... They would have had to get out of there and get on a plane.
But it does talk about, you know, it does have, it's not complete, but it does talk a little bit about, you know, what the requirements for the stage is, when they can load, sound check, their dressing room requirements. And it does have, you know, their management phone numbers. One thing it does say on here is they will not play before a segregated crowd.
Very nice.
In the contract. What is this? Cream 19 predictions for 1985.
I think I had that.
There's a picture of Night Ranger in there, right there. And they
see rat.
And the little blurb above it: this computer-generated photo of stick people looks like Night Ranger. So. One good thing is this is documented on video, this tour, in Japan of 83.
Yeah.
This big old thing is like a laser-type disc. Brent, you probably know the... It's not laser disc, but it's like a V-disc or something.
They were still called laser disc or video discs. Where you put them in and they would pull it out.
Oh my God! Yeah, plastic unit. I remember those.
That's how Star Wars was first ever released. And then you had to put it in and then flip it over. Here, I'm gonna get something real quick.
So that's so crazy!
I forgot about this.
Yeah, you got those. Then you have Laserdisc. Such an awesome... It's basically the same size as a vinyl.
Yeah.
But it's got just that black iconic logo. Live in Japan. Comes with a booklet. There's the Laserdisc on it. Two different variations if you're a nerd. You got the white Obi slip. And then you got one with the red Obi slip.
You're a nerd.
I like your shirt.
Yeah, thank you.
What do you got there, Brett? You look like you're itching to show something.
The DVD. It looks like a CD. and it also comes with a booklet. It's probably a reduced size booklet of Josh's Laserdisc version. It has some lyrics in it and... I know I'm holding it in front of here. I'm trying to get it out, and I don't want to bend it up. It has a black Obi. This one's a promotional version of it, so I lucked out on that. But great from Japan. It's expensive import. Runs about $100 if you try to find it on eBay. There are bootleg versions of it out there. So that's it.
All right.
All right.
Give me a second here. I'm working the page. I need to leave for now. Nope. Oh, she started it. There we go. Doing a little watch party for Eric Levy on the page. All right.
He'll understand why we're not watching. If he watches this.
So one other thing, how you can know that the band is starting to take off.
But wait, there's more. Bootlegs. What's that?
Oh.
So you're getting popular enough to where they're creating vinyl bootlegs. It's got that's the label. So it's got a custom label on it.
That's pretty cool.
So this is World Tour 1984. I've posted this on the page. But so the band's getting big enough to where there's a market for bootleg material out there.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool too. I like the black one better.
It's more impressive looking.
It doesn't have a custom label, but this is them playing Dawn Patrol and Midnight Madness. So they've got bootlegs are starting to be released. They do release DJ 12-inch promos. So these what's unique about these is they do have different edits. So there's like a short version and a long version on some of these. And these are probably two of the coolest things for Midnight Madness. I posted this.